Today on the Audio Stash, in our Patient Perspectives interview, we'll hear about the journey of one multiple sclerosis patient through diagnosis, traditional and alternative therapies, and now medicating with cannabis. Julie Falco is on the Illinois Normal Board of Directors and on the Board of Ideal Reform in Illinois as well. Julie often speaks in public on the issue of medical cannabis. Here on the Audio Stash and in many different forums across the country, the fact that cannabis helps the symptoms of MS is getting more and more attention. Montel Williams is probably the most high-profile MS patient using medical marijuana. But beyond the headlines and the straight medical facts are tens of thousands of Americans living with MS in their own personal way. MS has no known cure, and even the cause continues to be hotly debated. What is known is that MS patients who use medical cannabis report benefits to their condition, but also to their lives in general. Now, what does that really mean? When MS patients say things change, what changes? Julie Falco joins us today with a very personal interview to help us understand living with MS and how medical cannabis makes her life better. Julie, welcome to the Audio Stash today. Thank you very much again for having this discussion with us.
Thank you for having me.
Julie, let's talk about when you first discovered you have MS. Looking back, what were some of the first signs?
1986 was when I first noticed symptoms, and I was dragging my left leg, and that's when I first noticed symptoms, and then I didn't have anything after that kind of cleared up. I didn't have anything for 2 years. And the first time it happened, I was just walking to a Jewel Osco, and that's when I noticed that. I was home for spring break from college, and I was walking into the Jewel Osco, and I noticed my left leg was dragging. My toes were dragging on the parking lot. And I thought that was very odd. I didn't know what that was. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm just, you know, taking it easy, spring break, hanging out at home. My mother was getting remarried. And so it was just a lax time. And I thought, oh, maybe I'm just being lazy. And it continued, and it continued to be a problem. And I figured out it wasn't just being lazy. And I had gone to a chiropractor, and he did some tests on me at the time, and he really didn't want me to go back to school, but, you know, I had to get back to school. It didn't seem that much of a problem. I thought I'd figure it out later, and I actually had, I was playing in a band then, and I had some gigs that weekend, and I had to be back at school to play the gigs, and sure enough, went back to school, and at the time, I was doing some singing, and I was on stage, and I was in the middle of the last set, the second to last set, and I couldn't even finish. I had to have another backup singer finish out the set the rest of the show because I had to go sit down because my whole left side stiffened up. My legs stiffened up in place like this. It just locked there, and I couldn't move it. And my left arm was bent at the elbow in front of my chest, and it was like I couldn't even move my elbow or my arm. Everything stiffened up, spasmed, where I couldn't even move it, and I had to be carried off. After the show was over, I basically had to be carried to the hospital.
And after that, what led up to your diagnosis?
I went through the gamut of all these weird symptoms, and we went to different doctors because we didn't know if we should go back to a neurologist or, you know, we went to an ears, eyes, throat guy or... And they couldn't figure out. They thought, oh, you have Bell's palsy on your face, and, you know, didn't really think anything of it. So after going through another sequence of doctors and not getting a clear answer, I got I had an MRI done. Yeah, I'm rushed to St. Presbyterian, and sure enough, they said, you have MS. So that's when it began. And basically, the neurologist I had was completely not helpful and just said, okay, don't just go home, don't do anything, rest. There's nothing you can do. Don't even bother going to support group. This was the advice he gave me at the time. And promptly, I switched doctors to find the support, something, you know, you could grasp onto because you have a known MS, unknown disease. What causes it, how to cure it, completely mystery. So, yeah, go home and don't do anything about it. That didn't sit well with me.
So this is in 1988, before the publicity about MS, and in a world lacking the internet and ability to just sort of sit down and look up the MS Society, at least for some information. Once you did find a doctor you were comfortable with, what were your first steps?
I tried, you know, my hand at going to support groups, but they just never worked out for me. And I did a lot of reading, and I did a lot of different, actually, holistic treatments, you know, naturopathic. I tried acupuncture for a while. I tried reflexology. I tried massage therapy. It's very beneficial. Swimming. Numerous different alternative ways to attack this, because I didn't know what else to do. As the symptoms did progress and they changed over the years, they always seemed to center in the legs. But in the last 5 years, I'd say, it kind of has moved. I have like a constant numbness and tingling now in my left hand. And I had a bad exacerbation where I couldn't play guitar. I couldn't hold down the string. And so it's been really hard. It's been a really hard progression.
Julie, you mentioned alternative therapies, but what were some of the pharmaceuticals and clinical treatments your doctors tried?
Well, early on, Chris, when I had a few exacerbations here and there, there was a point that I couldn't even walk. I couldn't even get out of bed. And they put me on different steroids. There was one called ACTH, and I forget the long name. I always forget the long name, but ACTH was a steroid. I took it intravenously for 3 days. I did recover my mobility. I was able to walk again, but it left me just devastated with side effects. I got completely bloated, feet swollen. I had to give myself these injections in my thigh muscle, which is just horrific. I had a hard time doing that. And I broke out everywhere, just one thing after another with that. And prednisone was another medicine they tried me on. And most of them to me did not, outside of walking again with the ACTH, with having so many side effects, most of the medications never really helped. I tried baclofen. They gave me baclofen. That's like the number one drug to help with your spasticity. That's what they give to you first. And I had a home health nurse, actually, and she was administering that to me. And when she left for the day, I kept monitoring it because I was having like heart palpitations. They're like just these skips in my heart, and I'm like, what is going on? I feel really just really dopey. And I took my pulse, and I was like at 46 beats a minute. And I thought, this is weird. Okay, I'm really feeling loopy trying to go to the bathroom. And I call the nurse, and I go, is this normal? Because I noticed this the last couple of days, and I don't think it's good. And she's like, no, that's too low. You better stay off of that. So I stopped taking that medication, and I moved to Xanaflex. That was another medication for spasticity, and I had to take that at night when I went to bed, because it made me feel like I was drunk on alcohol. I had woken up one evening in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and I could barely make it. I have a hard time walking, number one, but this was like I was banging into walls because my head was so lightheaded, and it was very uncomfortable. And I thought, this is dangerous. I don't think I'll be taking this anymore. So then going through the suggested medications, it was always trial and error, see what was going to affect me, and I knew that I was very sensitive to a lot of the chemicals, a lot of these pharmaceuticals, but I kept trying, and nothing ever seemed to really work. And then I was taking the Tylenol 3s with codeine in conjunction with a beta seron shot, an injection I had to give myself every few days. And this medication is supposedly, you know, what they say, this is what it's working on, is to slow the progression of the disease. It doesn't cure, it doesn't make you feel better or anything, but it's supposed to slow the progression. So I always call it my blind faith drug, because every time I took it, I'd say 98% of the time I would wake up the next day. I would take it in the evening. I'd wake up the next day with an awful migraine. I'd have all the flu-like symptoms and just achy muscles, achy everything, on top of just EMS pain. And I would have all these symptoms the next day, and so that day usually would be the complete rest day, and I wouldn't do anything because I felt like just horrid from all these side effects. And I would take the Tylenol 3 with codeine to kind of offset those symptoms, but then I find out that the codeine is constipating, so then I'd have to look into to take something to counteract that. So all these medications, all these things to try to help me was making me worse. I was getting more depressed and more just dark cloud feeling over your head where you're just way depressed. You don't know where you're headed. I'm trying as hard as I could to, you know, just keep doing what I'm doing, try to stay positive. But every time you turn around, it's like now you're losing strength and mobility in this hand, and then you've got, feels like you have a tight corset on around your midsection. What do you do now? What to take now that I'm not going to feel miserable? So I tried some antidepressants, and those were horrific. They gave me Elavil, which I was just horrified by when I went to sleep and had nightmares of actually killing people, chopping their heads off. And I decided, okay, I'm not taking this anymore because my waking hours aren't really that depressive anymore if I'm killing people in my dreams. It was just really upsetting. A lot of the other antidepressants, Zoloft, Prozac, all of those, my toes and fingers would curl from just the constricting. My pupils would dilate. And I sometimes felt like I couldn't take a swallow of water because the reaction was just so intense to my body. And Wellbutrin totally went in one day to my doctor. She prescribes this to me, gives me some samples to try. And I was, you know, just feeling pretty low at that point seeing her. And I weighed in, at, you know, got my weight, which was already a normal weight, maybe a little under. Went back about a week later, and I had dropped 7 more pounds. I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem too good either. Then I find out when I see one of those commercials that it's actually prescribed as an appetite suppressant for people. And I'm like, why am I taking this for MS? Or depression, it's not really helping. I don't have the weight, you know, issue to worry about. So that left me very drawn, very weakened from even losing that weight. So it's been this kind of trial and error over the years. And that's just maybe part of all the medications.
And Julie, when did you first try cannabis medicinally?
Medicinally, I would say it was probably the early 90s. And I would smoke it. As I did, of course, in college. That's when I first really started smoking it. But when I started smoking it medicinally, I did it because it was like amazing that it calmed Blake's spasticity down. It helped with the insomnia. It just helped me relax so I could get some sleep and just calm all the shakiness down. But I didn't do it consistently. I didn't do it all the time because I felt like it was aggravating headaches because I was prone to getting headaches, migraines. I have very sensitive, you know, sinus cavity, and I think that was irritating it. So, you know, I just limited myself to just every once in a while, that kind of thing.
And how do you use cannabis medicinally now to alleviate the symptoms of MS?
I started baking it in just a mix of brownies. And once I started eating it and having it go through my liver instead of my lungs, I was floored at the amount of benefit that I got from it. And also by being on it consistently, 3 or more times a day, but I average 3 times a day of eating a brownie. My brownies are about the size they're like 1 inch square. They average 1 inch square. Kind of the size, maybe a little bigger than the size of like the caramels you get, you know, during the fall, little caramel squares, or like a die, you know, and have dice, the die, maybe, you know, a little bigger than that. Right now, I've been using just straight, like, cannabis, about a quarter of an ounce is in a batch of brownies. I've used up where, because other strains, I've used up to, I've had 2 ounces in different strains that I've used in some of the mixes. And that's just the question of, you know, the different strains and how they work for what they're working on in my body and how they're affecting me. But the average brownie that I always take in, no matter what combination I've had in there, strain, was a 1-inch square piece. And in a brownie batch, we cut them up so that there are 80 squares. And, you know, about that size. And that actually cost $80. So this was our experiment, my experiment, to go, okay, that's $1 a brownie. The beta-serin injectable that I told you early about, that medication, that runs $1,000 a month. And it doesn't do nearly what this is doing for me, at least what I notice. And I don't have to pretend or imagine that it's having some effect. It was noticeable right from the beginning. I noticed how it calmed my bladder urgency down. It calms, you know, the problem with the constipation. It actually calmed even more so, more benefit than smoking it, for my leg spasticity and the insomnia. And I noticed in the beginning, like in the first year, that I was having profound mobility changes. As an experiment, I would go through periods like during the day, just really having a hard time walking. I would, when I'd get up, my legs, you know, flex and spasm so hard into a, like a straight-legged, stiff walk on my walker. And so it was always really hard to walk fluidly one step after another during the day. But there's a space in my apartment, it's about 20 feet, that I would walk in front of, you know, or walk through this 20 feet back and forth. And one day I walked that 20 feet, I did 9 of laps back and forth, 9 laps in 5 minutes when I was my stiffest and having the worst time walking. Later on, when the brownies would set in and I got more relaxed and everything, I was doing that same average 20, 22 laps in 5 minutes. I would do 22 as opposed to 9 laps, an average. And the highest I went was about 28 laps in 5 minutes. And that to me, and that was consistent. I did that for like a month, I think, pretty much that batch. And subsequent ones around that too. And I was having definite mobility changes that I think are profound, that I had friends and family over. And when it would settle in and I was standing up straighter, I wasn't so hunched over, you know, leaning on the walker as hard, struggling to balance. And all of a sudden I just had this, you know, I was standing up straight and tall, and my neighbors, my friends would go, you know, my family would be like, what's going on with you? You know, I don't know what's happening with you. And I said, well, that's the brownies working. Something's going on that I'm able to stand up straighter and not be struggling to grab onto handholds, you know, walking around the apartment without my walker or the canes and, you know, using the furniture. But I was just standing up straighter, and that's a huge difference. I would say this past year, the hugest thing I've noticed that has changed has been, first and foremost, my mental attitude. I'm not depressed anymore. I have, you know, like anybody, the sad days, some trying days, some upsetting days, but nothing to where I was ready to commit suicide, which I was before. I am nowhere near that. I'm completely in a much better place mentally, too, and I know that has to do with the brownies I've been eating. there's nothing about it. And I've been doing it consistently so that it's like my body knows and is waiting for that medicine to come, because now it's accepting and ready to take it in and take care of what it needs to take care of. I truly believe that. After going through so many pharmaceuticals and really not getting any benefits, anything close to a benefit, maybe a glimmer, but having all the side effects just overpower everything else. And I have no side effects from this. There's no side effects. The only thing I've noticed is sometimes I get a little dry mouth. And to me, that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket, no pun intended. You're going to be better for it by drinking more water. And that's the only side effect I've noticed.
And you touched on this a moment ago. Julie, you've been very open about using medical cannabis and its benefits for MS. How have the people around you reacted to the beneficial medicine being cannabis?
Well, since I've been talking about it the last couple of years and talking out and speaking to people and getting reactions, I'd say the response that I've gotten personally has been, almost 100%, 99% supportive and for it, and yes, it should be legal, you should have this, what is it, look what it's doing for you, and nobody really hands down has any question or any doubt or any hesitation over being in support of this. I have not run across one person that has, what do you want to say, heckle or not supported or completely disagreed. And, they might have their reasons if they feel, it should be legal across the board or not. That's a different issue. But for medically, hands down, yes, I should have it as my medicine.
And, Julie, what about your doctors and medical professionals? I know that you recently took part in a question and answer session with doctors at the University of Chicago Medical School. What were they asking, and, how does this medical community of ours react to an MS patient using medical cannabis and gaining these benefits?
Well, from what I'm responding right now, I'll tell you what my doctors. I have a general practitioner doctor that I know I brought it up to initially, and she really didn't say anything supportive or non. And it kind of, talking to her, it made me feel like she just wasn't educated enough about it. She was more coming from the feeling of, where the stereotype is still surrounded about, quote, unquote, marijuana. And not, in that fight of it, instead of looking at it as truly a medicine, because I know she wasn't as fully informed. My neurologist, Dr. Anthony Reeder, is at the University of Chicago. And he's also, he's an associate professor there. He was the one that helped set up the grand rounds for the cannabis presentation. It was very well done, and it was mainly just, very informative about the science. A lot of references to, a lot of the information you'd find in the Scientific American article that was on the brain and marijuana. And he's really supportive. He refers, many patients and suggests them as an option. He's been very supportive in having me try to acquire the Sativex out of Canada, too. And we try to apply for that through the Compassionate Use, the Investigational New Drug Program, to gain access to that, because that is legal for patients in Canada. So why not here? For a specific MS patient. We got to try everything we can. So the doctors at the grand rounds at the meeting, they were very interested. The same questions of exactly the response and how it affects me cognitively and certainly to see if there are any side effects. But just telling them the story of what would happen to me before and how this has changed by keeping a consistent amount in my system, that there's something that changes. And so I see and hear from them more interest and more curiosity, but there's still a struggle. There's still that tension in the air of trying to let go all the stigma surrounding it, just surrounding the reefer madness attitude. But I think they're more interested in just like, as this moves forward, cannabinoids, cannabis, you know, really looking at it as more medically and not just, you know, the stereotype image of what this is, and really seeing that, yeah, there's major benefit and they need to be on top of it.
Julie, I want to thank you so much for joining us again today, and I look forward to speaking with you in the future about Illinois Normal and your work there.
Oh, thank you, Chris. No, I appreciate it and love to tell you more.
Julie Falco is on the board of directors of Illinois Normal and also on the board of Illinois' Ideal Reform. We have links to both at normalaudiostash.com.